also. If you want any questions to ask before.
Changed the experience, haven't you? So it's part of like the Buddha didn't used to, again, like the Buddha didn't used to say, I'm the Buddha, pay attention to me. He just was him. Sometimes people didn't recognize him. So that felt quite important just to let it unfold. I think, and I think there is also virtue in doing something where you do communicate who you are and what you're about. So I do think there's value in that as well.
Some, not many. I think just for me to manage my own answer to that first question as well. For me, it was, I'm around here a lot, and most people know me and look at me in a certain way. Part of it's meant to get away from that and be lonely. So I was quite. It was not the slightest motive of mine to go and be in full sight. I wasn't going there in order to do that. I've done that in the past. We go and meditate in the city or meditate in the store or the Mosley market in order to, in a sense, be a full sight for people. But for me, this 44-hour thing was sort of the opposite of that. Although it did feel good sitting in a good meditation posture whilst people are rushing to work or rushing around from work. That did feel good. And I felt guilty.
Did you see the red bug?
Yeah. I did. I did a lot of metal bug. Metal felt really natural. I looked at people and I just felt a lot of kindness. One thing to dwell on. And that just felt really natural. I think it would have been different if it was winter. Sunny days.
So like I was worried that homeless people would come along and beat us up and nick our nice stuff. Yeah. Well, it's like you haven't got any money, but it's like you're poor, compared to your average homeless person. I don't know what they sleep with, but like I've got like a 60-quid sleeping bag or whatever. It's going to be better than having a blanket and some newspaper.
So you took your 60-quid sleeping bag?
Yeah.
But I think you did quite a lot.
They didn't have sleeping bags in those days.
That is true. Yeah,
he had the cloth that would need to stay warm at night. That's what we did. We took the cloth that needed to stay warm at night.
Okay, he was going to have a warm fire. I used to go
feel interesting to ask that. And I did feel, you know, I've got a sort of connection with homeless people anyway, because I've done that in the past, you know, most of my adult life. This was quite different. So I was there much better. So I've got a different sort of character in a sense. But I did sort of feel that, and this surprises me, just almost surprised me just mentioning saying it now, just that everyone's well thinking it. I do feel like this does feel weird. That I was fulfilling an aspect of society that is necessary. Aspect of religion. You know, I sat there on paper, yeah, completely outside of society, but also this is an important aspect of everybody who's walking past. They've all got a spark or something. And yeah, I'm sort of representing. Is that what you meant?
Yeah. I guess we all have different experiences, don't we? Because for me, yeah, I think that I feel part of society. Yeah, like, of course I do. Like, I suppose, like, I've, you know, like, this is, like, I've never done anything like that before. So it's like, you know, like, if, you know, like, I spent a week not shaving, so I'd look a bit scruffy, trying to choose my scruffiest clothes to wear when we went out. And it's still, like, it's just completely obvious. It's like, come off it, you know. It's like, I'm obvious, you know, like, I'm obviously, you know, there's obviously something weird going on here. It's like, I'm obvious, you know, like, I'm not a homeless person. I'm something else, so... Did I feel part of society? Yeah, of course. You know, like it is only a couple of days. I think you need a longer period to kind of like really knock that, or you need to be more, you know, like even more extreme in some way. So I felt like I was part of society. And just so what I was saying, it's like a sense of kind of openness and appreciation of people. Yeah, like that was very tangible. So again, it's like I definitely, you know, I didn't feel kind of critical or pushing away from people. You know, like I liked it when people laughed, particularly on Sunday afternoon. So Sunday afternoon is very different to Monday morning. Like Sunday afternoon, it's like people rolling out. They've been to the cinema. They've been out shopping. They're going to the pub. They're kind of a bit more open to life. So I quite liked, you know, just providing entertainment to people, you could say. You know, like most of the people, you know, talk about this idea of communicating something to people. For most people, you know, it was principally a source of entertainment. Or something just a bit different.
Often people come and sat next to us, so they go up and take a photograph.
Yeah.
And sat next to us.
Yeah.
At least twice.
And it kind of, that feels, in a way, it's just like, yeah, so you're part, yeah, you are in relation to people. Definitely not, like, it would be incredibly painful. You know, you can't sit there with your eyes shut and try and... I think I said at some point, if you sit there and shut your eyes and try to pretend like you're on your own, you know, you're going to have a really painful experience. It's like, that's an insane thing to do. You've got to open. You know, like, here I am, I'm open to these people.
Great.
Thailand is an ethnic Buddhist country where too. Yeah. So, like, in some ways, like Saraha was saying about the, you know, because we sat in cathedral thingy.
Yeah, garden, St. Paul's Cathedral, is it?
Yeah. So we sat there most of the day. You see people going to work, then you see people going to lunch, and then you see people coming back from lunch, and then you see people going home. So you have got a sense of the rhythm of the day. And even, you know, I can't say that I saw any one person doing all four of those journeys, but you did see some people either going to work or coming, you know, going to work and then coming to lunch, or going to lunch and then coming back from lunch, or going to lunch and then coming out to go home. So again, you just get that sense of people's lives flowing on.
And people would sit on the, like we were sat on the grass in the park, and people, you know, office workers would come and have their lunch sat on the grass in the park.
Yeah.
And we didn't look that different from them.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that just seemed the same, in a sense.
It brought to mind something that St. Francis said about, as a beggar, you're giving people the gift of giving.
Yeah.
So you serve a purpose in the sense that you allow people to demonstrate or to use their generosity. Did you feel a nuisance, or did you feel like you were, you know, giving to some extent?
I felt that for some people, I made them feel very uncomfortable. And for some people, I was just nothing. And for some people, yeah, it was a... There was one person put money in my hat, and I got the vibe of her that she had a guilty conscience and was trying to make her son run away from home or something. You know, something was, like that was going on. Some grief in her giving. For some people, it felt just open-handed. You know, I mentioned this, I wrote something on Facebook. One of the things I said now is that for a lot of people, seeing a beggar on the street is the only time in your life you can put your hand in your pocket, take something out, put it in a hand that's in need. And I think that is a significant act for people to have. And it's great to give to charity, but to actually put something in a hand, I think it's quite strong.
Did you have to ask for money, or was there
no
money? Did you give them that person?
I don't know about you guys, one of the...
Enough paper games.
You know, one of the things that I thought was that the Buddha never asked for food. He would have a bowl, he would stand at a doorway, stand there in silence. And after a few minutes, if maybe he'd put anything, he'd go stand at the next door. Likewise, so that was for me a principle.
So there's an ethical.
Yeah. Although the police's position on zero tolerance to beggars, it's illegal to sit on the pavement and beg. So the only way you can do it is by going up to people and saying, you've got any spare change. So by having that zero tolerance policy, it means you're creating a culture of aggressive begging, unfortunately.
What kind of reactions have you got since you've come back? Has there been anything inspiring that you've been inspired by?
From my point of view, mostly people have been inspired to, intrigued to delight. I haven't had anyone be particularly negative at all the whole experience. We had, when we got back, had somebody ask a very interesting question, which I thought was really useful actually. They were quite reactive and quite unimpressed, and they were like, no, it's not the same. You could have gone home whenever you wanted to. Which was, and they said, you know, with a certain level of, not impressed, which I thought actually brought out a really interesting point, that actually the same is true of the Buddha. Any day, you know, in the Buddha's life, he spent 35, 40, or 50, 60 years wandering, living a very simple life. Once he was a famous teacher, any moment of that time he could have turned around and said, yes, please, I'll have a palace. He never chose to do that. So actually, it's quite a strong statement there.
His dad invited him back home. People came off to the palace. Yeah, so that was true. So it was, for the Buddha, it was an active choice every day to keep doing that. That was for us as well. So for me, yeah, that was an interesting. Somebody asked that question, and that was it just that helped me to see another angle on the Buddha's life.
Can I just change your stereotype? Homeless people as looking scruffy or something, because the homeless people I've talked to in the last few years, mainly they're quite smart, except they're selling a big issue.
Yeah.
And I talk to them, and some obviously are saving the money to sleep in the hostel, some are actually sleeping, but and they just have facilities that they use, obviously, to clean up and stuff.
Yeah.
They like to present themselves very well, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there was one chap who was incredibly scruffy and sooted because he was sleeping in the spaghetti junk room, keeping warm with bonfires, really not looking at himself very well. By and large, if they haven't got a big issue in their hands, you wouldn't know that they weren't an ordinary average person.
Yeah, thank you for making that point.
I'm sure there is a scrubby free.
Well, I think, thank you for making the point, because I think one of the really interesting things about life in general is when you reveal your prejudices, so you have an experience and it reveals your prejudices, so in a way what you're saying to me is like, yeah, you just remind me that, oh yeah, I do have unconscious associations and connections, which are prejudices, and it's really important to kind of, when you notice them, just notice that and say, okay, well, I'm making strong assumptions here. I suppose on the point though is that's a barrier. You're having a simplified perception of another human being, and that is causing you and other people pain. That's what the metta-bhava is about, is overcoming those barriers, seeing the way in which we create those with our minds and seeing through them. So yeah, so you're absolutely right. Homeless people are not always scruffy. Nor are Eastern Europeans ever always scruffy. Just to be clear.
You know, one of my scariest people, you know, one of my prejudices is, you know, drunk young men at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We were sleeping in this doorway, and I only saw 2 drunk young men at 4 o'clock in the morning. And they were walking down the road like this, together, and one of them stopped and put a pound in my hand.
How has this experience changed your relationship with yourself?
I had great dreams for the next week. Do you want to answer that?
We spoke about freedom. I mean, you spoke earlier about making change. I mean, obviously that's a big change in the relationship with yourself. Unless that was already in place before the 6 months.
Well, there's still more work to do, but I definitely feel more me, if that makes sense, in effect. More able to kind of go for what I want, for the lifestyle I want. And that's to be as simple as I possibly can be, to live with as little money as I can do. And I feel
I spent like half an hour doing nothing this morning, and that feels like that's an impact from just having slowed down a bit and having seen the value of that, enjoyed that. And then it's also, I suppose we're all just very different, aren't we? Like, David and I, you know, old friends, so in some ways it's like, actually I feel really pleased with myself having supported my friends in doing something which, you know, which was important to me as well, but was a significant element of doing it because through our friendship. And actually that's good. You know, supporting those friends. I think we should stop for a tea break.
One or two more questions.
Well, I would ask if you would recommend, encourage people to do this, or if you have an idea how to. Okay.
Hold on. I would, however, it's like Sarah was saying in what he talked about, it's like, you know, it wasn't easy for the Buddha to do this stuff either. It's like, you know, he was in a nice warm climate, and, you know, in terms of society, was used to having people do this. They're not used to having people do this. So it's, in a sense, it's like I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you go and sleep on the street like I did, or like we did. But I would recommend that you challenge your own sense of what's safe and what keeps you in your comfort zone. It's like, for me, like, expansion comes from being out of my comfort zone. So I'd say to everyone, and if that means being homeless, or if that means putting yourself in the park at night fearing that somebody's going to come and attack you, do it, because the likelihood is that they won't. If they do, and you'll have that as an experience to tell. It's like,
in a way, it's like, I think there's been a bit of like, oh, don't recommend that people do it because they could get mugged, and it's a bit like, oh, you mustn't do that. But in a sense, it's like, you can get mugged anyway. It's like, you leave tonight, you can get mugged. There was three of us. I would recommend that people definitely do more of this kind of stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean sleep on the street, but whatever it is that takes you out of your comfort zone. Because you're really going to find out who you are. Like Dharmashan was saying, like he talking about prejudice, but you know, for me it's like a sense of freedom that I've never felt before, and a sense of love that I've not felt before. To the extent that like for 3 days afterwards I just could not stop this emotion from coming out, and I was crying at ridiculous things in the park, or each time I tried to even talk. So it's like, for me, I feel very expanded after doing it. And what, I can't remember what her name is, Susanna Jeffries or whatever her name is, but when she says feel the fear, do it anyway. Dharmashan will tell you that this, it's not always good to follow that advice. However, I do believe it. So if there's an area in your life that you're fearing, go and do it. You might die, and that's the worst.
So to qualify that, what I say about fear for fear, feel for fear and do it anyway, it's a famous book, if you've not heard of it. I completely agree with David, actually, but I suppose for me the caveat is feel for fear and do it anyway. Focus on the emotional and social elements of fear that you experience rather than the physical, because some of the things we fear in life are objectively scary because it's dangerous. So it's that, I think, you know, there's unlimited mileage in social and emotional feeling fear and doing it anyway. It's, you know, like you can't go too far with that. In terms of like lived experience actions, obviously one needs to evaluate things like, I'm scared of driving like the car 120 miles an hour through mostly. That's because it's really dangerous for me and other people. That's an extreme example, of course, but
use your brain.
Having nearly killed myself, feeling the fear and doing it anyway once in my life. It's like, actually, I feel quite strongly about that. That's another story.
Well, what importance of the context when you're doing it? That would think that you together as a friendship, going on, like you've gone on retreats before, that you prepare yourself during karma appeals. Like, there is other things, other fears you challenge before, challenging this bigger fear.
And I think the opportunities to do it, you can help.
Thank you.
You know, I think as David pointed out, you know, for him, and certainly in a sense for me as well, it's more scary sat here than it is doing that. You know, less so for me because I'm quite used to doing this, but I was as scared half an hour ago as I was at